here to introduce themselves. I see some folks who are here yesterday and some new faces. So, especially since what we're talking about, change, affects each of us so differently in so many different ways, it's good to kind of get a sense of where people are coming from. Let's start out. I'm Luther Snow, and I'm the leader of this track, which I guess kind of fits in the global justice track this week. And I'm also going next week for any of you who are staying over, which I gather is usually no one. So you'll just have to wait for the book or something. We'll get a lot done this week. Why don't we do this and then go around? Your name, where you're from, something about profession, what you're into.
My name is Bob. I'm from Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania. I went to college class of 51. I just retired 8 years ago as a professor of political science from Bloomsburg University in Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania.
Okay, I better be careful today with a professor of political science here. Okay, go.
Corinne, Cora, Iowa, retired proposal writer at Bloomsburg College.
Lisa, I'm also from Decorah, Iowa. I teach English at the college there.
From Boston, Washington, my profession is in the financial division for Nordstrom's, which is a department store.
Yes, that's great.
I'm Alice, and I'm a campus ministry and associate at Minnesota State University in Mankato, Minnesota. I'm a student at the Luther Seminary.
Here I'm the assistant to the president at Luther College, and in the last 2 months I've been up here, one of the teaching staff coordinators.
Keith.
I'm Keith, and I'm the Vice President for College Advancement at Augustana College in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and also a Luther grad.
I'm Rachel, I'm the archivist of Luther College.
I'm Amalia from Madison, Wisconsin, 95 Luther College grad, and I'm a reproductive and sexual health lobbyist in Wisconsin, and I also do organizing within the community around those issues.
I'm Mark Sass at 97, and
you guys quit. So bad.
And I'm an organizer for a political organization called the New Party in Missoula, Montana.
I'm Lyle Olson from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I'm a hospital pharmacist there, and this stands for South Dakota State, not San Diego State.
That would be the rival of Augustana College.
Yeah.
But we're still sitting on the
right.
Yeah. Pharmacist? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you.
No, I'm not a pharmacist.
I know you're not a pharmacist.
We made the South Dakota sandwich, though, because Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Luther College class of. my L fell out, so I don't know. I'm having it fixed. Anyway, Keith, art teacher at Sioux Falls Christian, and mother, and artist, and not the whole night or thing very well. But, yeah, the list goes on.
Yes, I know.
I'm Jamie Bellingham, Washington, and I'm here with a lot of friends from the Seattle Methodist Church. And I'm an artist. I've worked with Shackley Corporation for about 20 years. I'm a wellness kind of person and got into that because of my interest in the environment. So we resurfaced all again with this huge gas explosion.
Mm-hmm.
And with our kids are growing up, I really want to do something in the community that makes a difference to the environment. So that's
I'm Williams from Decorah, Iowa. I've been retired most of my life, and I'm very interested in health.
I am Cassie Apple from the Methodist, Walling Creek Methodist Church, some other people here. And I work in the Seattle Public Schools. I'm really interested in what we can do with our youth and helping them build their own assets.
Talk about that. Vicki.
I'm Vicki Sorgo, North Dakota. My work is with Sister Parish, and their church is one of our newest sister parishes.
Really?
Yeah, linking North American faith congregations with marginalized faith communities in Central America, Mexico, along the Texas Mexico border.
Oh,
I'm their church in
general. Oh, very cool.
Sister Parishes.
And my other newest one is in Decorah, actually, with the First United Methodist. They made their first trip to
Guatemala
in May.
Okay.
I'm Peter. I'm not from Decorah.
What class?
I'm not from Luther College. I'm a pastor in West Fargo, North Dakota.
Concordia. Why don't you say it?
Be proud.
Concordia Moorhead.
I'm Sonia Sutra, 53. Sorry. I just moved to Kirkland in the Seattle area in March, but before that we lived in Aurora, Illinois, and my husband taught French and Spanish, and I was a college librarian, a cataloger, and reference on the side. We all do reference on the side.
What college?
Aurora University.
In Aurora University?
In Aurora.
Aurora.
Advent Christian.
And I'm a retired English prof from Luther College, still living in Decorah. I'm a graduate of Concordia, and I work with the Habitat for Humanity affiliate in Winneshiek County, and I'm on the stewardship committee of our congregation, so I hope to raise money for the church.
One thing we get a lot of is people connect with their money. That's good. Did you come in after?
Oh, I did. I think I'm going to answer it right, but I'm in Vance, Oregon. I'm a nurse, and I go to the First Presbyterian Church there. And we're supposed to say something about why we're here at this class.
No, that's good enough. We need nurses, man. There was a nurse yesterday who knew everything. So,
so you have a high standard to live up to.
Yeah. Okay. I want to just give you an overview of the series, a little bit of an overview where, you know, we spent an hour yesterday kind of introducing this whole spark, breaking out of cycles concept. Today we're going to get practical about that with this asset-based community development. There are handouts here that basically provide detail about what's on the board. And if you got a pencil, you might make some changes here. So yesterday was just basically the introduction. We are not doing institutional dynamics today. Because of Renaissance, I had to drop one of these and push it to next week, so we'll do that next week. So stay next week. Today, asset-based community development, nothing tomorrow. Thursday, same time, probably the same place. We're going to be talking about place-based actions. We're going to talk about urbanness and ruralness and suburbanness and how a place affects community and how community affects place and what difference it makes. Session 5 is kind of different from the other sessions because we're not going to have really a lecture description at all. We're just going to use it as kind of a group consulting session. And we're going to take the real-life change challenge of one or more of the members of the group and then try to use this SPARC model to see if we can't help them to work through some new strategies for doing that. Next week, some of the things we're going to talk more about, money and markets, some more about economic development, job development, business development, church-based action. We'll get into that a little bit more this week. Another change clinic and then so, that's what we do. I told people yesterday that I'm a community economic developer and activist, born and raised in Chicago, and cut my teeth and developed my skills and got pushed and beat around in the streets of Chicago and worked in all the low-income grassroots communities in the city. And in the course of my work doing that, I found that whether I was talking to bank executives when we're doing some sort of a community reinvestment negotiation, or whether I was talking to peers and colleagues from college or home, or whether I'm talking to church groups selling investments in affordable housing deals or something like that, what everybody always wants to know is, does it make a difference? It just seems so foreign that you can be out there and in the streets of Chicago and some neighborhoods that I'd be afraid to even stand in and then making housing happen in a community where no housing had been built for 30 years, or developing businesses through sweat equity co-ops, or planting community gardens in the middle of a bombed out neighborhood where all buildings are torn down, or whatever it is, a new holistic healthcare system in a place where all the hospitals are closing down. And I told people, you know, my first reaction to that was, well, I mean, what choice do we have? Of course we have to do it. The risk of inaction is so much greater than the risk of action. And boy, you know, it's one thing as an organizer that you learn is that there are always going to be people, and everybody will doubt and question and worry about the chances of success, but ultimately at some point you have to act, and you really don't have any choice about it. But I thought more deeply about it, and I thought, well, really, this is the question that guides all of our work, and not just in community economic development, but in healthcare, and in nature and science, and in art, and in nursing, and in families, and in our individual lives. And so I started to think about why it is that the chance of success is such a tough thing for all of us. And I started to think, I went through a couple of stages that I talked about yesterday. I thought about flows of change. I thought about the pendulum swinging back and forth. I started to think about cycles and how so often in the world, in human life, in natural life, the status quo seems to perpetuate itself in cycles. And the one that hit for me first, I'm going to do this a lot, so I can get good at it. The one that hit me a lot was being politically organized in Chicago was the Chicago Machine. You know how machine government works? It's not really unlike old. Yes, ma'am.
Can you turn the overhead light up? Thank you.
Okay, and now this light isn't on, but if I draw, you still be able to see with the sunlight. Okay. So, a machine government is really not unlike an old boys network or governments in a third world country like some of those that Jonathan Frerichs has been talking about in his sessions too. So there's an election and the machine. They have to do one. The machine wins the election. And then they control the spoils of government, jobs, the contracts. And then they use what they call influence peddling. In other words, they give the jobs out, they reward and punish. They reward their friends, punish their enemies, and then they get a workforce. And speaking of money, financial resources, for their political organization, telling people in City Hall in Chicago, even today, it'll be empty on election day because the campaign workers are all city workers who, in return for their jobs, are out there knocking on doors and making sure their voters are getting to the polls. And so that reinforces then this dynamic. And so Eddie Daly was mayor for 25 years. Now Junior is mayor for 25 years, is what it looks like. So it's what they call in, I guess it's computer and information technology, a positive feedback loop. They even say it's cybernetic because it's self-creating. It gets bigger and bigger the more times it goes around in this circle. So I thought about this in other contexts as well, and we did a lot of examples of this yesterday, and I'm not going to do a lot of them today. And I've done a lot of research looking for it in weird places, but alcoholism and codependency kind of cycle. In art, the creation of new genres, which then become accepted and then copied and emulated and become conventional wisdom, and then new genres get developed again. Yes, ma'am.
This might be a little bit off the sideline, but Lyndon Johnson and the Great Society, didn't it have quite a bit of impact there in Chicago? Did it change the cycle at all? I mean, he said,
no.
It did.
The Great Society was quickly co-opted by the machine. The Model Cities programs were the big programs that were going to fund urban development, and they were quickly taken over by the machine as a way of giving out paychecks. And you know what happened again 3 years ago? They heard about empowerment zones. That's like the big urban thing. $100 million and tax breaks for hiring people in the city. Instantly taken over by Junior Daly as a political kind of thing. And actually ground to the halt. They haven't been able to give the money away because they're so tied up in the corruption. And to their credit, Clinton and Gore have been trying to get them to open up a little bit, not being so afraid of community groups. Same kind of idea, using that patronage to kind of spin it around. But I look for it in other weird places, and you know, I've been reading this book about the origins of life. Talks about a heavy subject, some man, Lumenberg, or something like that. And he talks about information. Now I got to pull this down again. In something called the circus. And basically his claim is that life was created by these positive feedback loops of information. Information transferred from small groups of molecules to ATP, to RNA, to protein, to DNA, and then circled over and over in every sort of successive generation, and then creating through the power of circular reinforcement, you know, complex life organisms that we have today. And he would say that all this dates back to the origins of the universe and just fluctuations in energy that created information right back at the Big Bang. Or I showed the Big Bang thing yesterday too. Here's Stephen Hawking. Big Bang, talk about a spark. That's where it all started, right? Well, here's his theory, and it's just a theory, starting with the Big Bang up here, the increasing size of the universe, followed by the Big Crunch. Isn't when time is supposed to go backwards? And so that he's looking at this as a cycle of expansion and contraction for the whole universe. Of course, they're just guessing about that. But it's interesting to me how people think about these things. And so that's kind of the point. In our individual lives, and whether it's in science or nature or health or in communities, how do we think about change? How do we think about how the status quo perpetuates itself? And how do you break out of that? Where's the spark? And what are the sources of change? Well, today we have a model that I think is really useful. It's not just a good example of thinking about breaking out of the old cycle, but it's also a really practical tool that we can use in our own communities when we get home in lots of different ways. I got a book here by Jody Kretzman, John Kretzman, and John McKnight, who are from Northwestern University, called Building Communities from the Inside Out, A Path towards Finding and Mobilizing a Community's Assets. I recommend this book. It is in the library, and I asked the librarian to put it on reserve, so you can take a look at it there. I'll have my copy of it here. I also have a couple of their, they have a series of workbooks here, a guide to capacity inventories, and here's more of a kind of a thought piece. And I brought some order forms if anybody wants to get those. It's, you know, I don't get anything from it, but I thought people might be interested in that. I look them up. What's it all about? Asset-based community development. You know, 6 or 7 years ago, Jody Kretzman started coming here, and I don't know if any of you remember. This woman here, what's your name again?
Sonia Skarsgård.
Sonia, you came, you saw him, huh?
I saw him, I heard him, I was excited, I thought it was fun. I thought it was terribly exciting to hear what he had to say. And I come from Aurora is heading toward being the second largest city in Illinois. Has a very, very large Hispanic population.
Uh-huh.
And
right.
Somebody said, what difference does it make? And I was sitting here thinking about the neighborhood around Grace Lutheran Church in Aurora, which used to be a nice middle-class neighborhood, and now the Hispanics are beginning to move in and it's beginning to go downhill. The pastor sponsored a program of planting gardens on the corners of all the streets. And you know, you feel better driving down that street past that garden. It makes a difference about the way you feel about the neighborhood, and it very obviously makes a difference about the way they feel about the neighborhood, and it's just a few flowers. You know, it's minimal.
Okay. So that's kind of where we're heading here. Let's talk about the reasoning behind it and how you get there, because that really is a head change kind of thing.
I think change is a very desirable thing in our life. You might not like it while it's changing, but after several months or maybe less time, you can understand that that change is advisable.
I agree with you. Okay, well, here's John McKnight. Here's my diagram of John McKnight's critique of basically the social service industry. And this is where they started out. And these guys, I was working with them when I was in these community groups in Chicago. They're at Northwestern University, so we were their laboratories. We were their partners, in other ways. And here's what Don McKnight would say. Here's the cycle he identifies. Start over here. Well, I'll do it up here. Start over here. Social service agencies, and here you can think of what he calls the caring professions. So this would include hospitals, it would include welfare agencies, it would include employment training agencies. In some ways, it might include schools, although I think that's kind of marginal, and it depends. But this agency then organizes to meet needs in the community and to correct client deficiencies. So we are here to make sick people well, and we are here to make unemployed people employed, and we are here to make, you know, poor people not so poor, or pregnant people
not so pregnant.
Have hope.
Have hope, thank you. And so then they assess and respond to community needs and deficiencies. Okay, so we're organized to do this, so the thing that we have to do is find out what needs there are, and then organize to match then our services to those needs and those deficiencies. And then here, the community then, but we need these services because we're sick or we're unemployed or we're, you know, disadvantaged in some way. So in order to get these services, we got to be the needy client, because that's what they're doing. They're organizing to meet the needs of needy clients to access those services. Well, then what that happens is that the community then grows to depend on agencies and professionals for services and resources. And not to be independent, but to depend on the professionals. So now I'm sick. And then John McKnight goes into the whole thing about how then the professions tend to expand as this circle goes around. And then there's, you know, new fields of professionalism, bereavement counseling, and it's the employment access counseling, and so forth and so on. And that's his kind of critique. Let me ask, there are people who are in what we just described as the caring professions here. You see a critique like this, how does it make you feel?
A little defensive.
Uh-huh. Who said that?
Me.
Yeah.
I'm also a medical social worker, licensed in the state of Minnesota.
And why does it make you feel defensive?
Well, actually, I was ready to argue, and, you know, that's when I noticed that I'm lining up all my arguments. That's a sign of defensiveness, I think.
Yeah, hey, well, give me one.
I am
interested in how it makes you feel, because I think this is kind of the weakness of his thing here. And he got a lot of defensiveness.
Yeah.
Hospitals blew up at him. Social service agencies blew up. Why? Why would they be mad?
Because of funding. He's challenging.
He's saying they're part of the problem.
Yeah. I think it's a vicious circle.
That's the word right there. She's on it. Huh?
You're not empowering the clients, you're making them, it's like feeding the bird feeder bird.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, right.
Well, at the same time, though, the agencies organized to meet legitimate needs. They were there were people who are needy clients, and they can't function on their own.
Okay, so there's
so
a good thing
a good
about
rationale.
This.
It could raise a lot of hostility, because people in those helping professions say, this is a hard enough job without challenging the very foundation of why we're here.
Yeah, yeah. And I say to people, boy, I don't know anybody in the caring professions who's in for themselves. I don't know anybody in the caring professions who isn't sacrificing income, stress, time, energy, and so forth in order to be in the caring professions. And I don't know anybody in the caring professions who doesn't care and who isn't in it in order to try to solve needs and problems. So let's lay that on the table and leave it there. But let's look at the other thing about it, which is that what he's really picking up on is a systematic dynamic, okay? He isn't criticizing any individual professional or any individual agency even. What he's noticing is sort of the institutionalization of action, and I can extend it even to any other kind of institution. And actually, I think part of the problem with his critique is he didn't expand it to business, which is the same thing, and he didn't expand it to other large institutions where the same kind of thing happens. It's institutional concretization, getting set in your ways. At some point, the survival of the institution starts to eat up what energy and time and effort the people within that institution have to try to accomplish their mission. Now, yesterday we had the same thing. Who was it that was saying, It was about healthcare, wasn't it about reproductive healthcare and the funding thing? And how you get soaked up through all your time and trying to chase after the money when you really want to be doing the reproductive. So it isn't even that people want to do it. It could be happening despite what people want. It could be happening because of this powerful dynamic that the status quo has to perpetuate itself.
You're saying that this is identical to the spoil system circle.
It's dysfunctional
in the same way that is dysfunctional.
That's right. It is a cycle to perpetuate the status quo. So this agency, in order to survive, adopts, because it starts from the point of view of needs and deficiencies, then has to identify needs, and the community has to get in line with that in order to access those, and that kind of reinforces this in a vicious circle. Just what you mean? What's the first
number? I had surgery about 9 times, and I have been blessed with excellent surgeons each time.
Uh-huh. Right. Who cared? And who made you feel like they care? Right?
It was a doctor in God. I happened to be the only person living in the state of Iowa who survived the kinds of surgery.
Okay. All right. So how can we talk bad about these people, right? Go ahead, Keith.
This vicious circle, you talked about the funding with your situation. That's my job.
Right.
And I raise money, and I understand that. Well, what I'm seeing is that circle caused by the dependence of the community, because it's so easy to get it. Here they are, and more people say, well, I want to fit in that loop so I get these things.
Right.
Or is it the funding sources? I see huge things go on in foundations and corporations that are so narrow. I mean, you talk about racehorses with blinders on. Try dealing with grant makers, because they'll only do certain things. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a time where you could go to a U.S. West corporation when I worked at Luther College, and you could get all sorts of things for whatever you were doing. Now you go to U.S. West, and they'll only do things on diversity issues or K-12 education and partnership opportunities. Period.
As a grant writer, I get caught in that the section on the right side, where the community asks the role of the need client. I have to reword what the needs are.
That's right.
In order to get the grant. Yeah.
That's right. And now all of a sudden you catch 22, the vicious circles, because the big bucks
very careful
are
language.
Fitting little niches. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let me try and draw this. I'm just trying to draw the circle that you're describing here.
Okay.
So a funder identifies these needs, right? Guidelines.
Yep.
So they're called, right? Okay, so then the grantees
write their proposals.
Adapt.
Based on the guidelines.
Adapt. And
create programs.
Essentially, they provide needs. Right? Okay? And so, therefore, those needs are counted. So then the funders feel good about what they did.
Right? Do more.
Sound like that? Okay. Not really different from the first one. Kind of like another circle, like that circus that we talked about. Another spin of it. Same system, though. Because the needs then here is the deficiencies that are identified in the community. John McKnight blew this cycle away. He was a spark, and he has changed all the funders. He has changed many of the hospitals and the clinics. It's a movement. We're all involved in it. But the point is that there was a big change, and he sought to try to replace this cycle with another cycle. His pitch is, why do we look just at needs? We got a cup, and it's part full. Down here might be neat. You better do the empty part needs, right? What about the part that's full, the assets? Why don't we focus on what's strong? Why don't we focus on the talents and skills of the welfare mother instead of the fact that she doesn't have money? Why don't we focus on the space and the facilities and the expertise that the hospital has instead of the deficiencies of its patients? Why don't we focus on the assets of the community instead of just its needs? And he doesn't do this, but I'll do it for him and Jody. But they would replace that. Well, I got a couple of things. Let me just do these. So their needs analysis would be if you're looking at the half empty cup, there's a fan on it. All right, help me out. Can you see?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that if in the self-perpetuating cycle, after, you know, I guess starting with what, Jane Addams or before that, we start to look at needs and more needs and more needs, and here are all the bad things in our community. Unemployment, broken family, child abuse, crime. That's a map of our community. That's kind of the vision of what we are in that kind of system. That's the argument. So she's right. Okay. What do we want to replace that with then? Is this one. Community assets map. Well, who wants to live in that community with all that unemployment and broken families and all that negative stuff? I mean, nothing else is a downer, right? That's what she's saying. It feels bad to live there. So here's the assets of our community. And these are just the people assets. Gifts of individuals. Income, youth, elderly, labeled people, artists, citizens, associations, churches, the innovative, cultural groups, local institutions, schools, parks, hospitals, community colleges. Thinking of all those things as assets. And you know, it's really kind of a business model. If you're going to develop a business, and I teach entrepreneurship and self-employment to people, well, what you look at is, what have I got? What do I have access to? What skills do I have? What capital do I have? What assets do I have to develop to create a business? Instead of, what needs do I have that I have to fill? You go into a bank with a business plan that says, I need this much income to send you out the door. But you say, I can produce this much income by developing these assets, they're going to say, let's have a look at that. So this is what they're trying to move to. And what's interesting from the point of view of this whole SPARK discussion about getting out of cycles is that their strategy is to replace that negative cycle with a new positive one. So just remind you, here's the negative cycle based on needs. What if we could substitute for that this one? Healthy cycle of who said empowerment. See, that kind of the development that grew as a word, didn't it? You know, and just in the past 10 years, and it's part of this kind of change in thinking. And I don't know.
Thank you, Professor.
Yeah, there was this part here that I'm anyway. Okay, so in this one we identify our own assets. There's no professional here. I mean, there might be a facilitator or something like that to help us to do this, right? Or a book. But first we're going to identify our own assets. I'm going to talk about what they are in a minute. And then we're going to use our assets to develop more assets and opportunities, just like you would with a business. I'm going to take my $10,000 investment, and then when I get some income, I'm going to reinvest it in the business. I'm going to take my skills, and I'm going to use them to go to college and reinvest in my own personal skills. I'm going to build the strength of my institution to meet community opportunities. So then those development efforts provide opportunities for partnerships with outside resources. Okay, so here's where the outside resources start to plug in, not at the beginning, but at this stage after the community has identified its assets. And then those partnerships create additional assets that are available to the community, which in turn they can then reassess and redevelop. Kind of a healthy cycle. So, a lesson for this breaking out of cycles thing here is, to the extent that we think this approach is powerful and that it works and that it makes a difference, one of the lessons is that to break out of a powerful cycle of perpetuation of the status quo, you need an equally powerful positive cycle to perpetuate a new status quo. You need a vision of how these changes that you're going to do are going to reinforce themselves over time, or they'll get lost in the fight for control with the negative cycle that is there and so powerful. We had the guy talking about domestic violence yesterday and how powerful that is. And even after you break into the cycle, how they fall back into the same kind of relationship. And how you really need to get something in there to substitute for that negative cycle in order to be able to make that change lasting. I'm going to talk about this in a minute, but let me see if there are questions about
this. Can you expand on that left box? What all is in that box?
This here? Yeah, we're talking a lot about that right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Capacity inventories and so forth. Then we're going to do exercise on it. That's what we're going to do. How about, are you defensive now?
Oh, I'm starting to feel a little more hopeful. That we can work together in a partnership.
We can work together in a partnership. It's a little better. Once you get to the solution, this is what I find with John McKnight especially. Everybody agrees with the solution. It's the description of the problem that people have.
You touched on that abuse thing, but if we work together in a partnership,
yeah.
What's going to keep it as a partnership not being co-opted by the system?
Ooh, I love it. Actually, co-opted by the system is one of the cells.
The negative system and the positive system.
Well, negative and positive, I think, are in the eyes of the beholder.
Okay, good. What I like to do is, here's a blackboard. I'm going to write that up here. Co-opted by the system. And when you hear that, what do you think?
The system takes over. You might have.
I think of the 60s. I think of the graduate. I think of plastics. But the system could be your family. The system could be your workplace. The system could be your community. The system could be the healthcare industry.
Oh yeah.
Define right? Community.
Actually, it could be any community. It could be any definition of community. It could be community of place. It could be a community of ethnic identity. It could be a community of just like us. Right. The point is. That can be the unit of analysis. So part of what we talked about yesterday is scope, okay? And that part of the trick of this breaking out cycles thing is to be able to shift your scope and to be broader and narrower. And the example I used yesterday was an earthquake. Seems like a singular, one-time, cataclysmic event. But if you broaden the scope and go to Tom's lecture and find out about plate tectonics and bubbling magma and so forth, it's really a cycle that's going on, this shifting of the plates over time. Just sort of a question of when, mind a little detail. But you broaden your scope and you start to see things in a different way. So community could be a number of different units of analysis, kind of depending on where you're at, what you're looking at. Okay, and then we're going to apply this kind of thinking to different units. All right, well, let me get specific about the asset-based community development model so that you get a little bit more sense of what they mean when they're doing that, okay? And you know, it's not all new. I started thinking about assets really when I got started as a community organizer. Where's my new party guy? David, right?
Mark,
right. One of the things you do as an organizer is try to think of what the handles are for your people. And what Saul Alinsky always used to say was there are three: people, land, and money. Now, those are three kinds of assets. That's not really what a banker would look at. What's the balance sheet of the kind of Augustana say, Keith? What are the categories of assets?
It has basically endowments and properties. No people on that.
No people on that.
So they're a liability. They cost a lot of money.
That's right. How they look at it. They're a cost. Yeah, that's a cost. Right. People is a cost.
That's how they, that's the bank.
Okay, so we're a step ahead now of what we were copying before, right? Because we've got something that the business development model doesn't have. And in fact, a lot of the emphasis of this asset-based community development group now is in this category here. A lot of traditional economic development stuff is here. Housing, real estate development, commercial shopping centers, that kind of thing. And even here, economic development, getting the flow of money going into the community, that sort of thing. I'm gonna explain those two in a minute, but within this then, you remember the neighborhood assets map, there were individual skills. And now I'm just, providing details in that left box that you asked before. What are those assets? Community identifies those assets. Here are the categories. Associations. And this is kind of important, especially for Ringlight and Kretzman, that there's a distinction between something called an association and something called an institution. It's a gray line between the two. They're both organizations of people to accomplish certain missions. But associations are basically volunteer. They are groups of individuals who come together to act in a volunteer way. And what's one?
church. But actually there are quite a bit of work trying to find all of these associations and communities that are actually never listed. You know, foundations don't fund them. You're ineligible because you're an association. You don't necessarily have a 501c3. And then an institution where it's basically professional. And there's a staff. And it might be a board, and it might be an advisory committee or whatever. But it's acting as a entity in itself. In the law, there's something called a natural person. A corporation is a natural person. Can you believe that? A corporation is called a natural person. What's a natural person called? I don't know, but that's what they call it.
That's been the really interesting thing in the process to me, is that when a grassroots group becomes funded by a foundation and then gets professional staff, a lot of times it falls apart.
Yes.
Or, yeah. You know, then...
Or if it succeeds, it grows apart from its people.
Yeah, ignores the client.
Yeah. So that was the session two that got pushed to next week.
Okay.
But just to know here that there is this kind of thing, and that there's a cycle here that goes on. It's kind of like the agencies. As an association gets more and more institutionalized, it becomes more and more concerned about its own survival, because it's supposed to. That's what the board is charged. They have a fiduciary responsibility to be concerned about the life of the institution. Whereas an association, you know, if we have the softball team or you don't have the softball team, it depends on whether people want to play softball, right? So they draw a distinction there. Let me just play out land. I think you got to put property of all kinds in here. So that could be, and one way to look at that is space and equipment. But land itself is important if you're going to do a community garden, right? And then money, you got to look at money in two ways. And here you got to go back to the accountants, right? You got to look at capital and income. Okay. Now you've got a framework for thinking about how you can take action to make change in your institution, family, workplace, profession, unit of community. By starting from assets. And so basically the first step in the asset-based community development approach is to think this way about what you've got. And to community members identify their own assets. Okay? So we started with a project. I tell you, it was interesting. We started how McKnight came to this. I'm gonna take a step back and then get to the capacity inventory thing. Is that he came to this group I worked with, Bethel New Life, which I talked about yesterday, and some of you might have heard. And this is where I worked as the director of economic development. And we said, what are we going to do about the health problem in our low-income African-American community? And we looked at the emergency room. So we did some research. And McKnight is big on healthcare, actually. It's his biggest field. And so we said, let's go to the hospitals. The hospitals are closing down. There's fewer doctors per 100,000 people here than in Bangladesh. You know, it's just a terrible situation. So we went to the hospitals and we looked at the emergency room admittance slips. And they just counted out what was bringing people to the emergency room at this hospital in this low-income community. Well, one of the big ones that they thought they could get a handle on was dog bites. They're spending tons of money on rabies shots and expert care by caring expert providers, right, for dog care. So why not get rid of the dogs? And why not pay community residents? Take some of that money that you would otherwise spend on expensive emergency room care that could otherwise be going to gunshot victims, and use it to pay a bounty to community residents to catch stray dogs and turn them into the pound. And that's exactly what they did. And it cut the health care expenditures down in the community to such an extent that the hospital sat up and took notice. But at the same time, it empowered community residents, put money in the hands of low-income community residents so they can make money catching dogs now. And it turned around the relationship, okay? So then I started thinking, well, what are the other skills of local residents that we could use in this way? And, you know, unemployed people have skills just because they're not working. Employed people have skills that they're not using at their current job. working mothers have skills in motherhood and in homemaking, as well as in all other areas in our community. The skills of the trailing spouses and so forth, I think, is kind of a buried treasure in our community. So, for this one, they did something called a capacity inventory. Okay? And what that means was that in associations and with very little professional help, residents would draw up a list, and there's some models in here, examples of forms that people developed and used over time to think about. Let me just read you some of the capacity. I'm going to take it from this book. Here's a book, A Guide to Capacity Inventory. So there's a series of workbooks on like this for different tools that they use. Some capacities that they might be asking people about. Have you done this professionally? Have you done this on individually or at home or other? Window washing, floor waxing, mopping, maintenance, health, caring for the elderly. Caring for the elderly is something that people do all the time and don't think of it as a skill. Making a person feel at ease, grooming, dressing, construction of a building. A lot of people have painting skills or construction. Here, look at this, pages, right? Because when you start to think about all the different things that people could do, music, singing, security, upholstering, sewing, dressing, so forth and so on. Lots of different skills. And once you get that kind of information, all sorts of new ideas start to come because you're starting to spin a positive cycle of change. You're starting to build an asset-based approach instead of a needs-based approach. So they would have bartering, and they would have information exchanges where you could find out, well, who could do this work in my house? Maybe I can trade, or maybe I can pay for some of those services. And you can have the creation of co-ops and entrepreneurship. And you can have, boy, you know, some of these communities, anybody heard of Ithaca money? Ithaca, New York has this bartering thing down so that they have a medium of Ithaca dollars that they use so that essentially it brokers the bartering of services. And I think it's all $10 an hour or something like that.
We have it in Madison.
Yes, of course you have.
But I don't use it.
Okay. So, new money, I like to call it. Okay? So those are some of the kinds of things that start to come out from that. Then they do, what do they do with associations? They go to the associational map. Okay? And they map out what are all the groups in the community. And like I said, you know, there's always this sort of professional list of groups who are the service agencies in our community, but then there's this other list of women's groups and sports leagues and cultural organizations and genealogical groups and, you know, right? Lots and lots of them. And boy, you usually don't think of those as a source of social change. And yet they can be, the kind of connections that you make in the software. Like I was just talking on the way up here with a doctor, trying to figure out how to kind of break down the walls between him and some of his low-income immigrant patients. And I said, you know, one of the ways would be to be in a social situation where you're both playing softball together, or you're both in a musical situation or something like that. And that's a way that you can start to build a new kind of relationship. Well, so associational math, again, knowing what's there gives you some ideas about what you can do. And in fact, in Grand Boulevard in Chicago, a community residents went to each association and said, you know, we've got these kind of problems. We've got youth, we've got crime, we've got health problems and so forth, and we want to get active on a community plan to deal with some of these things, and do you think your group can help? And about half of them said, yeah, our people are dying to do that kind of stuff, and we're hungry for it. And then they do institutional analysis, and basically that results in the kind of discussion of partnerships that we're going to do in just a minute. So what they're doing then, remember on the far side here, is thinking about how institutions, which are often channels of outside resources, funding, and expertise, and so forth, can then be used to partner with local associations and individuals to make some change happen. Let me just give you kind of an example of that so you get a sense of it, and then I'm going to do a group process.
I think we've got 5 minutes, I think. Is that right?
No.
Yeah, 4. You're thinking 12, maybe.
Okay.
What's
But it's okay. It's a lunch buffet that starts at noon and goes till 1:30, so you can
eat
and
come see it. A
couple of us will leave because of kids. That's the only thing. Don't want to offend you.
Man, that went fast. I want to do the group process, though.
Let's do it.
Okay? Yeah. So, I'm just going to throw you into it because I saw yesterday that you guys are fast. So, let me do that. And, two groups. Right here. In a circle. There. In a circle. If you got to leave, sit here in the back.
Yes, sir.
We've got two scenarios here. Actually, you just did different scenarios. And I'm going to start with Faith Church. We got Faith Church and People's Church over here. Just a quick synopsis. Faith Church is a pretty well-off church, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. They've got nice building, nice facilities. They've got an endowment, a $500,000, a $350,000 annual budget, linkages to the local programs.
Everybody on the social missions committee is white.
I guess.
I don't know if there's other ethnicities that are hidden in there.
All right.
What
projects could Faith Church brainstorm? What did you all come up with?
We thought of, since we're all like well-employed middle-class people, we thought of helping out with some kind of job training, interview workshops, connecting up with the communities around us, using our big fat endowment for some maybe an SBA revolving loan kind of program, small community loans. We have some purchasing power that we can direct toward the communities around us. And some business training perhaps we could offer. We also thought we could maybe support some kind of arts program or music program or combine some kind of community theater interests in the communities around us. Are you keeping up?
The loan fund, the music program, what was in between?
Community theater.
The purchasing power, we've got some purchasing power.
Which
we can
use by?
Purchasing locally.
Okay.
We also have an idea about having more, I don't know exactly how to describe this, having more discussion of how faith works out in our vocations within the church to sort of build our youth a little bit and connect people to the church within our own community, of course.
And it became a career development.
And use that toward career development in these other programs. We thought, Corinne had the idea we could use the daycare program to reach parents in the local community and perhaps connect up with them. So.
All right, and what are you missing? I'm going to stop you right there.
Yep.
To do this stuff, you're rich, right? I mean, you got all these facilities and plans, so what do you need?
We're missing two things, we think, which is connections to the communities around us and relationships with them that we can build on, so a place to spend our money. And we're also thinking we might be missing a little vitality in our own congregation. We might be missing
leadership
that connects us to these.
We're missing heterogeneity.
Yeah, we're missing heterogeneity, that's right. We think we are.
Dang, I missed leadership and
Youth, or kind of vitality.
Okay, good. And diversity you're missing.
And we're missing diversity.
Someplace. Okay. Over here, People's Church. What'd you brainstorm? People's Church is a low-income African-American church in the inner city. They've got a crumbling building. They've got land and a residence and three vacant lots. There's some office equipment and a bus to pick up seniors. They have linkages to local block clubs and political organizations and a congregation of people, especially young people, with commitment and determination, a small budget, and no endowment. So what can you do with that?
We spent time working on our creative
set. You need to meet us.
We need their endowment.
Ka-ching. We spent time working on how we might use the three empty lots we have to expand our community connections. And so some of the ideas that were offered were having a community gardens.
Uh-huh.
We knew we needed to find seeds and
teach people how to compost.
Okay, so wait, so they're teaching, one idea is community gardens, so then the resources needed, you've got the land, but you need seeds and what?
Tools, access to water.
Expertise.
Expertise in things like composting and...
Great, keep going.
Thinking of ways that tools could be shared and pooled, and how we'd get the word out. In fact, using the church for the office equipment to produce flyers and invite people to help us distribute those in various places, supermarket and so on. And have a special day where we would round up tools, build a common pool, and skills.
So you're doing some internal asset development there.
And then raising, perhaps raising money as part of getting what we needed to advance the project.
Like grassroots fundraising? All right, that was one. Wasn't there another one? Well, the youth construction training thing.
Yeah, training center. Got that right. Developing youth leadership, because there are a lot of youth in the community. Perhaps helping or finding people skilled in construction and repair to train community members to develop small businesses.
Okay.
Well, we were talking about first. Let's fix the church.
Fix the church.
Let's use the youth. Let's get materials. While we're doing this, we can teach them how to do the jobs. Maybe this can grow into a business of people who are cooking, well, and repair. How hard is it really to get somebody to fix something in your house?
It's terrible. Okay, I gotta stop you there. Oh. Right, but go.
One more thing. Make one of those vacant lots into a sports field.
Yes.
We can invite these guys over. We can
together. Okay, all right.
I think we could beat you.
You're
not
a
chance at all.
It's a place of community building and relationships, so they come together around community to talk about their own needs.
Can either one of these congregations do it by themselves?
No.
Can they do it together? There are some things that you both pointed out that you could do internally. The sharing of tools thing I saw is just an internal kind of a thing. The developing youth leaders and relating faith to mission. But you know, if you're going to do that, you got to practice what you preach, right? And if you're going to share the tools, if you don't have seeds to plant or something, then yeah. So this is not to say we are incompetent to act on our own. But it is to say that partnership isn't just a one-way street, right? That what we do is we match resources to resources, assets to assets, and that by building partnerships, we can accomplish more together than we could accomplish on our own. What is the sister parish program about, Vicki?
Building partnerships and sharing assets.
How do people sign up?
See me.
See me.
Well, it takes, it's not that simple. But.
Foundational to Sister Parish thinking is that a poor community in Honduras or Guatemala has something to offer a rich community in the north.
Yes.
And I absolutely know that's true. It's not just a belief anymore.
Right.
It's proven to me that I need what they have, and they may need what I have, and that we're better off when we are together and sharing what we've got. And what is not helpful is just to come with money. If you come first with money, and so there's been a whole era of development kind of things where the rich people come and say, what you need is a water system, or what you need is, you know, that is not empowering. That is creating dependencies, and what's needed instead is And in this particular scenario, wouldn't it be neat if our African-American church could develop some kind of arts program and kind of get people in touch with their own heritage and dance and music and have something to offer a rich suburban community.
And our youth are coming. They'll come for that.
Mm-hmm. They'll come, they'll enjoy it, and we'll enjoy doing it, and we'll have something to offer.
Cool. So... their asset-based development. Anybody ever created a legal partnership? I had to do this at Bethel. Mary Nelson said, we're going to have to do some partnerships. Find out how to do that. Okay. I'm not a lawyer. You know what the lawyers told me? Get a list of things that each partner wants,
and a list of things that each partner can put in, which could be in the form of capital, or it could be in the form of work, and taking out could be in the form of shares and capital, or it could be in the form of income, right? And that's how you do it. You just do it like this. The lawyers do this all the time.
Wow.
It's basically the same thing. They've got forms for it, you know? So this is what we do. Let me wrap this up here, people. We moved from one cycle to another. We moved from this cycle of need and dependency to a cycle of assets and empowerment, say. And so as a strategy for social change, what I felt is this matrix right here, and I'm testing it out. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't, but I've tried it in a few things that work. The spark. Where does the spark come from? What's the social change impetus? Where does the cause? Is it external or is it internal? Okay. And then on this scale, does it act on system weaknesses or does it act on system strengths? And I think there are things in all four of those boxes. And what I think is that this bad cycle of needs and deficiencies was here. Okay? So it was about external spark, and it was about based on the system weaknesses. And that's how it cycled. And the genius of the asset-based thing, and McKnight and all that, was that it was here to talk about. So you were asking me yesterday, do I have a magic answer? I don't have a magic answer, but I've seen this one. And this one worked by moving from that top left one to the bottom right one.
You're not saying that this is really easy either.
I mean, no. Nor am I saying that's the only way to do it. And you know, you get real close to social Darwinism when you start trying to apply biochemical models to community groups, for example. All I'm saying is, if you think about how change happens, does it happen from the outside or does it happen from the inside? Does it happen based on system weaknesses, or does it use judo to kind of move the strengths of a system in a better direction? This asset-based community development approach says, let's try the bottom corners. We have more exercises on that Thursday and Saturday. That's kind of what we're going to use at the Change Clinic to make that happen. But that's kind of the point of this approach, is that's how it fits in that change. Hey, thanks you guys.
Hey.